But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had another plan for the Muslim Ummah. All it took was a holy man and a revolution of high caliber to come and wake up the Muslim Ummah, to give the Muslim Ummah the much needed time to revive and strengthen and awaken itself. The plan, dear friends of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, was most surely going to be accomplished. So it took a religious and holy man almost 60 plus years until, by the grace of Allah, Imam Khomeini came forth. He was an expert in numerous fields of Islam, if not in all of them. And this very same Imam Khomeini brought forth a revolution which would awaken the Muslims all over the globe. A revolution based upon the principles set forth by the Holy Prophet and the Holy Quran. Imam Khomeini was to bring an Islamic revolution, and the Islamic revolution woke up the masses and brought hope and strength to the millions of Muslims across the globe. A chance to wake up, a chance to move forward towards the great Muslim civilization.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Foresight. Now, one of the main and major lessons which the Islamic Revolution and Imam Khomeini have taught the Muslims and the Muslim Ummah is that the only way forward is to apply and practice Islam in our daily lives. Unfortunately, the Muslims and the Muslim Ummah were under the false pretense that Westernization or modernization, or capitalism, or liberalism, or anything other than Islam has the solutions to the problems of the Muslim Ummah. In reality, the solutions to the Muslim Ummah are only within the principles and the precepts of Islam. Islam is a complete and perfect religion, and it is an all-around way of life, a way of existence. And so because it is a way of life, a perfect order for humanity, it has all the pieces of the puzzle already solved. Whether it is social and economic justice, whether it is Islamic economics, whether it is Islamic politics and government, whether it is the religious or practical sciences, you name it, it is in Islam. And so as Muslims and as the Muslim Ummah, we can only go forward if we hold the hand of Islam and let it guide us towards a brighter and better future. And so, no, the Muslim Ummah is not out of time. As long as it follows and obeys the Islamic principles and precepts, we will be stronger than ever before. And in reality, it is the enemies of Islam and the enemies of humanity whom are out of time. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. See you.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
St. Pancras Station, one of London's biggest and busiest. But not today. A 48-hour strike by train drivers, preceded by another 48-hour walkout by other rail workers, have meant travel misery for thousands. The dispute between ASLEF and the RMT Rail Workers Union on the one hand, and the employer Network Rail and train operating companies on the other, is largely over pay and the impact of inflation on workers' wages. But disagreements have kept a deal elusive for months.
Well, we want to hear movement on the issue about some of the conditions they've put down in Network Rail. That's a restructuring of all our members' terms and conditions. And it's a similar recipe in the train operating companies. They've gone for a thing called driver-only operation, which we think is extremely unhelpful. We can't accept that. And, of course, we'd like an improvement in the pay offers.
Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has so far refused to meet with the unions to try and hammer out a deal and has instead vowed to get tough on the strikes. His government is also accused of trying to turn public opinion against the strikers. But there's no sign of that happening yet.
I think workers are well within their rights to demand at least living wages to be kept in line with inflation. I'm fully supportive of this.
I really sympathize. I think they're right. So I'm not mad. It's inconvenient.
The UK economy is experiencing the combined effects of Brexit, the war in Ukraine, and its effect on energy costs, as well as inflationary pressure on the post-pandemic recovery. And rail workers are not the only ones complaining.
ASLEF and the RMT are two of the UK's most powerful unions, able to bring their railway service to a standstill during industrial disputes. And the concerns they have been raising about the difference between people's pay packets and the cost of living at the moment are shared by many different industries and professions.
Nurses, ambulance drivers, teachers, postal workers, driving examiners and the like all have pay deals with the government in the pipelines and are likely to be offered less than the rate of inflation. And that means the UK's winter of discontent is likely to drag on. Saeed Poreza, London.
Veteran Iranian politicians were present alongside foreign activists, scholars, and researchers on the second and final day of the first international conference on Martyr Soleimani's School of Thought. Panel discussions shed light on different dimensions of Martyr Soleimani's life and legacy.
You have to live with people like Martyr Soleimani to understand why they chose that certain lifestyle. Not only that, but even more important is how they choose to die. This makes people like Martyr Soleimani stand out.
According to the participants of the conference, Martyr Soleimani had a deep understanding of politics and based his views on the guidelines of the late founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini. They say this is the most important reason why he should always be remembered.
It is our national duty to keep the memory of Martyr Soleimani alive. He is a role model for future generations, and we need to elaborate on his school of thought for the next generation to walk down the same path.
My husband is in prison in our country, the Republic of Azerbaijan, since 2011, when he was sentenced to 12 years in prison for protesting against the ban on hijab. He was inspired by Martyr Soleimani. It is very important to introduce Martyr Soleimani to the world and the younger generation.
The plight of the Palestinians was another topic high on the agenda.
This conference is of great importance because one of the major goals of Martyr Soleimani was to liberate Palestine, and this is also one of the major issues that was pointed out in the panel discussion. It has also been mentioned in the final statement of the conference.
Eight panels separately focused on different dimensions of Martyr Soleimani's school of thought, from his personal life to his teachings and great leadership skills. However, his views regarding international politics received more attention.
I think we can highlight three points. One
deals with the role that General Soleimani had in stopping U.S. hegemonic designs for the Middle East. The second point was his ability to organize people, to create networks of like-minded people. He was a religious man, he was an ethical man, he was someone that attracted people, and that was one of the reasons that he was successful.
While the organizers of the conference have decided to set up a permanent secretariat, they say they are open to receiving more research papers, projects, and books for the next conference, which will be focusing more on the legacy of a man who is known for making great efforts in eradicating insecurity in the region. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani fought for peace, security, and stability in the region. According to the participants of this conference, his greatest legacy and achievement was eliminating Daesh terrorists. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
Historic electoral breakdowns in the United States continue to multiply. For the first time in 100 years, Congress has failed to immediately elect a speaker for the House of Representatives, which is the nation's number three post following the vice president. After 2 days and more than a handful of votes, a group of around 20 so-called Trumpist lawmakers continue to reject the mainstream Republican, Kevin McCarthy. An irony is that Donald Trump urged Republicans to unite behind McCarthy, a reflection of the deep divisions in a politically reconfigured nation.
It's kind of the Republican establishment not knowing how to deal with the monster that both the corporate and right-wing media systems have kind of created over the last kind of period, the emergence of Trump as a political figure and then the rise of Trumpism. It's really kind of gotten away from at least the establishment Republicans that would very much like to be able to wash their hands of January 6th and can't.
The failure to choose a speaker reduces Congress to total standstill, with legislation impossible. The only legal solution is for someone to finally win a majority. In 1855, that took 2 months and 133 rounds of voting. The Republican red wave of 2022 only produced such a narrow midterm victory that even a small group of their lawmakers can exert a huge amount of influence. The hardline stance of the dissenting Republicans is actually what many Democrat supporters expected out of the so-called squad of alleged progressives after their party's even narrower blue wave win in 2020.
Very much kind of putting to shame the squad and showing that being a unified bloc, even if you're a minority, if you take a fighting stance and you don't go along to get along, you can fight for meaningful wins. Unfortunately, now we have an example from the right.
The caucus of dissenters is often described as far right, while others note that their nominee for speaker is an African-American and that their demands include more transparency in legislation and less power for congressional leaders. Many expected that a divided Congress would produce squabbles and political stagnation, but perhaps not this quickly. The electoral dysfunction at the federal level continues to embarrass and perhaps discredit democracy with American characteristics. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
While the world celebrates the start of a new year with festivities and a display of fireworks, Yemen ushers in the new year with fireworks from artillery shelling by the Saudi-led coalition. In just the first hours of 2023, Saudi Arabia carried out a series of artillery shelling in northern Yemen close to Saudi borders. According to the reports, at least 18 innocents were injured in the latest attacks. This comes after a year of bloodshed, according to the Humanity Eye Center for Rights and Development. In their latest report for the year 2022, the center revealed statistics of war crimes committed by the Saudi-led coalition. According to the report, over 3,000 Yemenis were killed and injured in 2022. Humanity Eye Center statistic and research analyst Gais Jamal reports that these crimes occurred near the Saudi border during a ceasefire.
In the year 2022, most of the crimes were committed on residents living in bordering districts with Saudi Arabia, despite the announcement of a ceasefire. The only thing that stopped was the airstrikes. However, Saudi rockets and artillery shelling continued. There was no ceasefire in the districts near the Saudi border. From the first day the ceasefire was announced, the attacks continued until this day.
Saudi Arabia and its coalition also attacked airports, Yemeni ports, and almost 15,000 homes, livestock farms, and communication stations in 2020, according to the report. Humanity Eye says it has all the evidence to prove that Saudi-led coalition committed war crimes on a mass scale.
We have met with French rights groups and presented to them reports with evidence that expose how Saudi Arabia and its allies and European states played a direct role in supporting Saudi Arabia with weapons that were used to commit war crimes on Yemenis. We presented all necessary evidence to this French rights group, and they have filed a case in court against Mohammed bin Salman and bin Zayed for the war crimes committed. This case is currently pending.
The European legal system is unlikely to bring any Saudi or UAE official to justice, which is why Yemenis want justice now.
We are calling on our government to take tough military actions against the aggressors. They are occupying our lands, destroying our homes, and killing us, and we will not remain silent for much longer. We are a free Yemeni nation with a great civilization. We have the right to defend ourselves.
The Yemeni people are suffering from the blockade and the oppression being spearheaded by Saudi Arabia. Therefore, we call on the Yemeni government to take decisive actions now to lift the blockade and end the suffering of the people.
As the conflict enters a new year, tensions are steadily rising on all active battlefronts in Yemen between Saudi-led forces and the Yemeni army. If a peaceful resolution is not reached soon, an all-out war is likely to ensue.
Pressure is beginning to mount on the Yemeni government to end the blockade imposed by the Saudi-led coalition as millions of Yemenis continue to suffer. Yemenis we spoke with are calling on the Ansarullah movement to end the siege now by any means necessary. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
The start of the new year has brought bad news for the Italians. The average price of unleaded petrol at the pump in Italy has once again surged, increasing by over 15 cents. That is about 15% more compared to December 31st. The latest hike is due to the expiration of measures introduced in May to mitigate the nefarious effects on Italy's economy of an exceptionally high increase in the cost of energy that followed the start of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. The price of unleaded petrol stands now at about 1.8 euros per liter, while that of diesel has reached almost 2 euros.
The increase in fuel costs at the turn of the new year is mainly due to the reinstatement of the full rates of excise duty and VAT on petrol, diesel and LPG that the former government led by Mario Draghi introduced last year. The spike is also due to the higher cost of mixing biofuels with petrol and diesel as required by the law.
Experts fear fuel prices might even increase further after February the 5th. When a European Union ban on Russian oil product imports kicks in as part of sanctions against Moscow over the war in Ukraine, this follows a ban on Russian crude that took effect in December.
With a population of 59 million and about 40 million circulating vehicles, it is easy to understand how vital is the role of road transport in Italy. It accounts for three quarters of all land transportation of goods. It goes without saying that the country's rising fuel costs for both petrol and diesel will have dreadful consequences for medium and small businesses and for everyday people.
While wages remain the same, fuel in general, energy costs keep rising. I'm very worried. Too much uncertainty.
What worries me the most is the fact that wages remain unchanged while the cost of living is skyrocketing. I have four kids and we are struggling to make ends meet.
Higher fuel prices further swell living costs for people in Italy as electricity and gas bills have increased by about 300% since September. Italy was expecting to raise almost 10 billion euros from measures targeting the super profits made by energy companies that benefited from the surge in oil and gas prices. So far, only one quarter of that amount has been paid to the tax office. Max Civili, Rome.
The Center for Political and International Studies of the Iranian Foreign Ministry has organized a specialized roundtable focusing on the fight against terrorism and extremism in the West Asia region. Guests and attendees from different Iranian institutions and bodies took part in the forum, which concentrated on efforts made by the Iranian anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Among the most significant topics discussed during the meeting were fighting terrorism in the West Asia region from the point of view of international law, the role of General Soleimani in fighting terrorism in the West Asia region, and the role of the United Nations in fight on terror in the West Asia region. On the sidelines of the meeting, Iran's former ambassador to Iraq, Iraj Masjidi, highlighted the late commander's role in neutralizing terrorist groups in neighboring countries.
When Lieutenant General Soleimani was assassinated, I was working as the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Iraq. He would frequently travel to Iraq in order to confront the ISIS terrorist group and help the Iraqi armed forces and Hashd al-Sha'bi with planning and logistic support. In other words, he played a prominent role in Iraq in the fight against terrorists.
Masjidi also said that efforts to bring a prosecution against those involved in the assassination of General Soleimani continues. In this regard, the head of a special Iranian committee tasked with pursuing the case of General Soleimani's assassination in domestic and international courts said an indict on the assassination will be announced soon. He was referring to a report by a UN expert on extrajudicial killings concluding that the targeting of General Soleimani and those accompanying him constitute an arbitrary killing for which the U.S. is responsible.
Iran has had a significant role in the fight against terrorism in the West Asia region, particularly in Iraq and Syria. And Iran's top anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, played a pivotal role in combating terrorism and defeating Daesh. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Brits are still reeling from the impact of 2022. It's hard to recall a political year that's seen the country lurch from one crisis to the next, all bookended, it seems, by the saga of which particular Conservative Prime Minister was in charge. Boris Johnson had managed to cling on to power despite mounting evidence presented that his position had become untenable. His missteps during lockdown, dubbed Partygate, a faltering economy exacerbated by the outbreak of conflict in Ukraine, made his departure an inevitability. The race to replace him was brutal, exposing the deep divisions within the Conservatives. Party members chose Liz Truss over Sunak before, but that was only the beginning of the saga. Analyst Chris Bambury was following events closely and reflects on that period of chaos.
We had this strange interim where Liz Truss beat Sunak, clearly showing that a majority of the Conservative Party membership were not going to vote for Sunak for reasons which I think are fairly obvious, which I never really talked about. But Truss was a disaster. And then we ended up with Sunak being shoehorned into the prime ministership with no actual election.
I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
Ah, the blink and you'll miss it Truss era. 7 weeks of chaos, which saw the pound take a hit and the markets recoil at the sheer ineptitude on political display. There was a sense that the UK's political landscape had now become a running joke.
The chaos of the Liz Truss premiership, you know, was just awesome. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that in British politics. British politics is supposed to be about stability. It prides itself in selling itself, Britain, as a brand to the rest of the world that has been politically stable. This was like Italian politics, you know, and prime ministers just coming and going. This did not give a vision of Britain as a stable political entity.
Not content with topsy-turvy politics, the UK's longest-serving monarch, Queen Elizabeth II, passed away age 96, leaving the UK contemplating its colonial legacy. With King Charles III with Camilla, Queen Consort, by his side, it was a new era, but one filled with old uncertainties.
I shall strive to follow the inspiring example I have been set in upholding constitutional government and to seek the peace, harmony, and prosperity of the peoples of these islands.
Despite the passing of the baton, the impact of Brexit, the stalemate in the north of Ireland, with the cost of living crisis biting, Prime Minister's in-tray was bulging. 2022 is also the year Britain saw a re-emergence of strike action across a multitude of sectors.
We have been reasonable, but it is impossible to find a negotiated settlement when the dead hand of the government is presiding over and blocking a resolution in these talks.
We are seeing the recovery of industrial unrest, workers taking trade union action, and finding that when they go on strike, they are popular, that people sympathise with them, sections of the working class and indeed the middle class. And I think that spells trouble ahead. These strikes, we haven't seen anything like this in Britain really since the days of Margaret Thatcher. This is new, and I think people are learning new habits, new skills of taking industrial disputes, and I think potentially this is a bit of a game changer down the road.
Rishi Sunak and the rest of his Conservative government will be desperately hoping that there is not a repeat of the past tumultuous year, a 12-month period that's seen record number of Brits slide into poverty. But analysts are warning that desperate changes need to happen because so far it seems the Tories are heavy on excuses and light on solutions. On the cusp of a new year, there are many challenges awaiting the average British family. Whoever is in charge in Downing Street, it's the most vulnerable who continue to pay the heaviest price. Without firm solutions from the political class, it seems the upcoming period might hold still more pain for those who can ill afford it. Amina Taylor, London.
چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن ملکون
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Imam Khomeini's viewpoint on condition of leadership. Unless the ruler is just, he will not administer justice in providing Muslims with their rights, collecting and distributing taxes properly, and putting the penal code into effect. Such a ruler may also make his friends, supporters, and relatives take control of people and spend Muslims' assets in fulfilling his own personal whims and desires.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the mosque. In one of his speeches, Imam Khomeini has said that the preservation of the mosques today is one of the things on which Islam depends. Now, in this part of his speech, obviously he's talking about the importance of the mosque. And on the other hand, he is pointing out the major thing that is holding the Islam. The important thing in the Islam is to preserve the mosque. And that's why he said that one of the things on which Islam depends is the preservation of the mosques. Why? Because in Islam, we have five-time prayers. In Islam, we have the Jummah prayer. In Islam, we have the Eid prayer. In Islam, obviously, we have many gatherings that are happened
in the mosques, and therefore we can see even in the life of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, they had mosques as the center of education, as the center of training, as the center of prayer, as the center of spirituality. Today, if the world is looking for the peace, they're looking for spirituality, they want an inner peace, Islam has provided that inner peace in a system which is run in a center which is known as mosque. So therefore, when we go to the mosque, obviously, because it's a pure center, you know, in other places, maybe I can pray at home, but in my home, I might have some sinful acts, I might have something which is not according to the teachings of Islam, some impurifications, maybe we have animals at home, like pets at home. So when we enter the mosque is a pure place, which is specific for the prayer, for worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, for the training, for the education. So the environment itself has effect on the people. And that's why Islam depends on the preservation of mosque, because Islam wants to take people towards the perfection. Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi, sallallahu ala. In order to reach the perfection, we need purification. In order to have purification, we need an environment which should be pure. So this pure environment is provided by Islam in the mosque, and that is the center, and that's why we should go towards the mosque. And I highly recommend my brothers and sisters living in the West, maybe in the America or Europe or UK, those who are living in the Western countries or Australia, have a connection with the mosque. Why? Because when you're connected with the mosque, you're making a connection between your generation, next generation, your offsprings or children, with a pure place, a pure environment. And there they can attain, they can achieve purification in a good way or in a faster way, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
The whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
Nine out of 10 children in the Gaza Strip suffer some form of conflict-related trauma because of the Zionist regime's violence and attacks against the tiny enclave. Experts say children with autism, who are often highly sensitive to external stimuli, are particularly susceptible to the enduring impacts of war and conflict, which could potentially make diagnosis difficult. In this regard, we have taken a look at World Media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of the Electronic Intifada wrote, when Auni Abu Hatab was a toddler, he preferred to play alone. His mother, Nujud, 28, noticed that his movements were jittery and excessive and that he was unable to make eye contact. She grew concerned and took him to several doctors and hospitals in Gaza. At first, I thought that he could not hear, Nujud said, adding, I went to doctors and they confirmed that there was no problem with hearing. Others said that the problem was psychological. Auni, now 8, has since been diagnosed with autism. Nujud said, we discovered this after years of effort. The National Institute of Mental Health defines autism spectrum disorder as a neurological and developmental disorder that affects how people interact with others, communicate, learn, and behave. Maura Atla, a special education specialist at the Society for the Care of Handicapped in Gaza, which was founded in 1975 and offers services to children with autism, said that children with autism often face misdiagnosis. Many doctors, she said, interpret cases of shock and delay in the use of personal skills in children as disability. Furthermore, children in Gaza already suffer from high instances of trauma as a result of Israeli regime violence, and children with autism, who are often highly sensitive to external stimuli, are particularly susceptible to the enduring impacts of war and conflict, which could potentially make diagnosis difficult. Before Auni's diagnosis, Nujud left doctor's offices feeling confused and frustrated. And while it was a relief for Nujud to understand more about her son's condition, life is not necessarily easier for their family post-diagnosis. At the family's home in Gaza's Beach refugee camp, Auni prefers to be near his mother. He likes to draw, but he doesn't like loud noises and the dark. Nujud said his brothers are young and they cannot bear his constant screaming and his nervousness. He hits everything on the ground. His movement is very fast and we cannot control him. Nujud has discovered that the resources for parents of autistic children in Gaza are extremely limited. She said, there are no institutions to take care of him, no hospitals, not even specialists who provide sessions for free. The Abu Hatab family struggles financially as many do in Gaza due to the Zionist regime's 15-year blockade. Auni's father works as a laborer and they share their home with three of his sisters. Recently, though, Nujud heard about Gaza's Society for the Care of the Handicapped and let them know Auni was in need of services. He was then enrolled in the society's Shams School, where he attends classes headed by specialists who understand developmental differences in individuals with autism. Nujud is hopeful that the school will be a good place for him, but like other parents in Gaza, she understands that until the family's financial circumstances improve, providing resources to their autistic child will be a struggle. Wafa Atale, 26, first understood that her daughter, Rawan, was different when she turned 2 years old. We started to notice that she was not responding to her name and that she avoided eye contact, she said, adding, at first, I thought that she only needed time. Just like Auni's mother, Nujud, Wafa took Rawan to many doctors, all of whom did not offer a hopeful prognosis, Ravon, now 6, was eventually diagnosed with autism. Rafa said, "I wish we knew earlier that she was autistic. Maybe her condition would have been better." The family lives in Al Zaytun neighborhood south of Gaza City and lives off of Ravon's father's income as a baker. They pay $117 a month for Ravon to attend classes at Basmat Amal in Gaza, though they are unsure if they can continue to pay that long term. Basmat Amal, like Shams School, provides classes and developmental support tailored to individuals with autism. Wafa is grateful to be able to afford the classes, but she acknowledges that the consequences of not having professional support to help with Ravon's development is a daunting prospect. Ravon's behavior can be trying for Wafa, as Ravon often screams loudly and finds it difficult to be still for long. Ravon's mother says, "Sometimes I lose control over her and I end up crying. I always say that if there was no Israeli blockade and if our financial situation were good, I would travel with her to receive better treatment and deal with experts who could provide me with the best techniques to deal with her." Ahmad Al-Nawati, 22, also attends the Shams School. He said, "I enjoy being a student at Shams School. My teacher is lovely and caring. I got to know new friends there." Ahmad's developmental age is 8 years old, and he is progressing along a third-grade curriculum, learning math and strengthening his reading skills. "His diagnosis of autism came later in life," said his mother, Naima, 55. "When he was born, there were no services offered to children with autism," she said. "How would I know? In that time, there was not enough knowledge about it." Naima said Ahmad's speech was delayed and that he found it hard to socialize with others. She said, "I was totally unaware of what was happening to him. I clung to the hope that he would get better with time." Dr. Hamouda Al-Dohar, the head of Nabil Child Care Center in Gaza, which provides services for children with autism, said, "I believe that we are in dire need of conducting awareness sessions for all community members, parents, youths, and mothers in Gaza. We need to involve everyone, especially parents, in treatment plans." He believes that greater awareness of autism in Gaza would also help reduce the stigma that some parents say is a problem. Yet certainly, one of the biggest stresses on autistic individuals is the Zionist regime's repeated wars on the Gaza Strip. Naima said that during the Zionist regime's wars on Gaza, Ahmad had found it hard to cope. He said, "I hate the loud sounds by Israel, and I can't stand the dark at all." The wars perpetrated by the Zionist regime have worsened his condition, according to Naima. He gets panic attacks, trembles, and screams nonstop when he hears explosions nearby, she said. He experienced depression for a long time. Now, when he hears loud music from wedding parties or any loud sound, even the sound of a car door opening, he gets close to me and holds my hand tightly. I hug him to reassure him that we are fine. Meanwhile, Tasnim News Agency noted, Hamas reminded the world of its responsibilities to criminalize the Israeli regime violations against Palestinians and hold the occupying regime accountable for its crimes. The Palestinian Resistance Movement has recently made the remark in a statement while marking the Human Rights Day on December 10th, which was adopted by the United Nations in 1948. The resistance movement said the world is marking this day as the Zionist regime continues to escalate its terror and systematic violations against Palestinians, including deliberate killings, land theft, siege, and racial discrimination and segregation. It went on to say that the day provides a good opportunity to shed light on the scale and gravity of the unabated Israeli regime crimes against Palestinians. It is also a suitable opportunity to remind the whole world of its responsibilities to take actual action to criminalize the Israeli regime occupation violations and colonial settlers' terrorism, work on putting an end to them, and prosecute their perpetrators as war criminals at international courts, Hamas added. The movement further stressed that Israeli regime crimes constitute a flagrant violation of the principles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and international law, reaffirming its commitment to the legitimate Palestinian rights.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers, dear sisters, salamun alaikum. So welcome to this episode of Lantern from IRIB English Radio. On the continuation of this program, Lantern, we have an interesting story, and I invite you to listen to it. Story of the Sparrow and the Elephant is the title of today's story. Be with us. A long time ago, Mr. and Mrs. Sparrow lived in the forest. They made their nest on a branch of a blackberry tree. Soon, Mrs. Sparrow laid eggs in the nest. Mr. and Mrs. Sparrow became very happy. Mr. Sparrow took care of her and their eggs. But one day, a big, giant, and cheeky elephant came near their tree. He started pulling the branches. The sparrow couple got scared after watching this. They pleaded, "Oh, dear elephant, please show mercy. This is our beautiful nest. We laid eggs in the nest. We are waiting for our children to come out eagerly. Please don't break the branches or else our beautiful dreams will also be broken." But that selfish elephant did not listen to anything. He continued destroying that place. At last, he broke that branch. This made the eggs fall and break in a blink of an eye. Mr. and Mrs. Sparrow started crying. Seeing this horrible incident, the sparrow couple's friends came to console them. Some friends were so deeply affected by this incident that they decided to punish the elephant. The mastermind frog made a plan to punish the elephant. He included gnat and woodpecker into his plan. On the next day, all started to search for the arrogant elephant. Later, they found him near the mango tree. "Let us excuse the plan," said the genius frog. Following the order of the mastermind frog, Nat went near the elephant and started buzzing into his ear. This made the elephant angry, and soon he lost control over his body. As he lost control and started to panic, the woodpecker flew towards him and took his eyes off. Moaning in severe pain, the elephant started crying. Due to intemperate pain and excessive crying, his throat started drying up. He went here and there in search of water, but he could not see anything. Listening to tar, 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 the sound of the frog, the elephant thought that he found the lake. He went near the ditch, following the frog's croak. The frog jumped into the lake. Thus, the blind elephant assured himself that he had reached the correct place. As he went down to drink some water, he fell into the ditch and died soon after. As all friends took revenge using their intelligence, all animals and birds cheered their win and started dancing and singing. A friend in need is a friend indeed.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, today we are going to talk about this famous proverb that says, a friend in need is a friend indeed. That is, a friend is one who holds a friend's hand. The importance of a friend in life is so great that it can be one of the effective indicators in improving people's mental health. There is no doubt in this issue. In 2011, July 30th was recognized by the United Nations as the Friendship Day, and since then, true friends celebrate this day together. In English, patron, friend, mate, ally, and fellow are used to mean friend. The synonyms of the word friend are brother and the words like what we have it in Arabic terminology, sadiq or khalil, close friends. Such words like sadiq, like sadiq, like khalil, like khalta, like wad, and others can be found in the Holy Quran. So we talked about the synonyms of this word in English and somehow in Arabic terminology. The importance of a friend in life is so great that, as I said at the beginning of this show, it can be one of the effective indicators in improving people's mental health. And this is definite. From the point of view of psychology, a person who has a faithful friend and always encourages him and his presence does not disturb the security of their friendship relationship, is less likely to suffer from physical complications, and the percentage of his helplessness in the face of life's problems is reduced. A friend is the one who tells you the truth, not the one who makes your lie the truth. That is, he doesn't want you to tell a lie, and then he's going to change your lie to a truth.
The lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
We have from different scientists, we have different quotes from different scientists about the concept of friendship. There is a beautiful description of friendship by a thinker that he says, some people should be multiplied so much that their generation does not become extinct. Yeah, they are the reason for your good mood. Those who even think about their essence, a smile sits on your face. They are the same people who accepted you completely in the worst situation. If you have any of these traits and rarities, grab them with both hands. So it means they are the true friends. However, the holy religion, that is Al-Islam, has an important advice and warning about choosing a friend. So what does Islam say here? From the point of view of the Holy Quran, a friend has such an effect on a person's life that it becomes a source of torment and painful suffering for some people. In this world, and the world to come. And many of the people of hell say, Ya waylata laytani lam attakhidh fulanan khalila. Woe on me, I wish I had not chosen so-and-so as my friends. In hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam, it is said that about the etiquette of choosing a friend. Imam says that a friend will never be a friend unless he has three characteristics. So in suffering and trouble, he rushes to help his friend. And second is to protect the honor of his friend in his absence. And he will not forget him even after his death and sends him charity. Let's have a look at what Imam Jawad alayhi salam says about the friendship and how to make such relation with others. Imam alayhi salam says, ملاقات الإخوان النشرة وتلقيح للعاقل وإن كان نظرا قليلا. Meaning that Imam alayhi salam says that meeting with the brothers is a source and inoculation of reason. Imam alayhi salam says that seeing a friend, even if it is short, should bring freshness and a lot of wisdom. So it is not just having this freshness and this sense of friendship, but it increases the person's wisdom. So this is what Imam Jawad alayhi salam says about the features and characteristics of a friend.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. أنا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.